Coming up next on Tech News Today, Ron Richards and I take a look at some CES gadgets. It's gadgets galore, including a bunch of Amazon Alexa integrations. Also, how routers seem to be really hot, starting with 2017 here. We try not to trip over the Curie home robot. It's very easy to do. You'll see why. Zuckerberg becomes a politician of sorts with his yearly challenge and the effects of robotic parents on newborns. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1675, recorded Tuesday, January 3rd, 2017. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT. And by Epson's new EcoTank printers, with Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase. Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about technology. What else are we going to talk about when the name of the show is Tech News Today? We're going to talk about technology and technology as it relates to news and news as it relates to today. How's that? I'm Jason Owl. Joining me once again today, because Megan Maroney is out until tomorrow, she'll be returning tomorrow, is my friend Ron Richards. How's it going, Ron?
It's good to be back. Thanks for having me, Jason.
Great to have you back. It feels like just yesterday.
It does feel like, but I'm very excited. I dodged the CES bullet. I'm not in Las Vegas this week. I'm very happy for that. I was there last year. This year, I like to do it every couple of years, but this year I'm home and I would really like to talk about all the announcements that happened today. So.
We weren't there, but we're going to talk about it anyway. Let's face it, when CES comes to Las Vegas, when it rolls into town, it like dries up the tech news that surrounds it. It seeps it into its pores and all you get is announcements from CES. That's pretty much what we're going to talk about for the majority of today's show.
What I find really funny from my experience of being at CES, I've gone a bunch of times already, and I actually, the years that I don't go, I'm more in tune with what's going on at CES than the years where I'm there on the ground.
So true. You know? So it's true. Such because a monster. When you're there, there's so many distractions. Like, there's a lot of things you can like get into your hands, you know, like you can play around with the technology and everything, but so much is missed when you're out there walking from place to place because it's huge. Yep. And I don't know. It's a different.
You can only go to so many presentations. You can only visit so many booths, and then you know it's a bear to get a signal or Wi-Fi because there's so many people there all online at the same time. And so you find yourself back in your hotel room, huddled over your laptop, scrolling to try to see all the news. So this is a lot easier to track the show. So there we go.
That's right. Okay, so we've got a couple of blocks today about CES stuff. We're going to start with it. So why don't we? CES. Obviously, it's still a few days away. Officially, it starts on Thursday. But you wouldn't know it by the amount of products that are streaming in from the pre-show events. So today, we'll check out a few of those more interesting announcements. First up is Lenovo, who has a few things on tap. First, their entry into the Microsoft Windows holographic platform with its as-yet-unnamed prototype VR headset. It has two front-facing cameras for mixed reality applications, they say. Inside-out tracking, so you don't have to be, you know, you don't have to have cameras set up in the room in order for it to know what part of the room you're located in. And two 1440 by 1440 OLED displays inside that your eyes are graced with, besting the resolution of the Vive and the Rift. And I mean, as far as, I mean, VR headsets, there's no way to say this VR headset looks really cool because they are what they are. But this one doesn't look too bad. What do you think?
This one looks neat. I mean, I think with this one and the next story that we're going to talk about, it's almost as if sometime in the summer, Lenovo is like, we've got to catch up, guys. You know, they're moving from, you know, they're established with the, you know, with their other various, you know, kind of hardware offerings, but it's neat to see them get into the VR game. And I think that this, this VR headset looks, it looks pretty cool, to be honest, you know, and I think those specs are really interesting. You know, the inside out tracking and the two front facing cameras for the mixed reality kind of thing. Those are the features that I look for in VR headsets now, as opposed to the closed exposure, because I want more of the, and Jason, you and I talked a lot of this, but the immersive experience. That right. utilizes the space around you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're actually expecting to price this pretty reasonably, $300 to $400. So you're not like, you know, you're not getting into that $500 or $600 range, which I'm imagining, you know, what is this even plugging into? So you're going to have some sort of system for it to be running. So it's going to get expensive in other ways, but it's smaller. It's lighter than the Vive and the Rift. They do the kind of design approach with the goggle that's similar to what PlayStation VR does, where they don't necessarily, you don't strap it to your head. It's more like it's suspended down in front of your eyes. And so it's just a different take on it. And in some ways it's more comfortable.
So, yeah. And so now, and I haven't played with the PlayStation one yet, but I hope to soon. The Microsoft Windows holographic platform, does that include HoloLens support?
Yeah. So, they're going to have some HoloLens software that would be converted to this platform. I think that the answer to that is yes, partially. You're not getting the total transparent view that you get out of the HoloLens, where it lets everything through. Like you have those cameras on this solution. So anything also, that you're getting that's augmented is passing through those cameras.
Yeah, and you're also not going to get the whole projection aspect of it as well, too.
Right.
It's going to be more contained within the visor, but that's a platform that I'm keeping my eye on, because I think that's going to be the game changer when it comes to VR.
Yeah, and out of all the solutions, that's the one thing I have not had a chance to throw on my eyes yet and see for myself. So I'm very curious. Anyways, that's cool. That might not be anywhere near release to consumers, but Lenovo did launch its own Echo competitor that will be available to consumers soon. It's called the Lenovo Smart Assistant. The device utilizes Alexa for its brains, Amazon's Alexa, of course, and skills integration. The design looks tall and cylindrical, a lot like the Echo, but the lower half more resembles like a Google Home with the kind of the fabric options down at the base, and you can get all colorful with those. The Smart Assistant starts at $129.99, the same price as a Google Home. That's also $50 less than the Echo. What do you think about this?
I mean, again, it's like Lenovo woke up at some point last year and like, listen, guys, we need to get it on these home devices. I think it's really interesting that they kind of took the design approach of an Echo, but adding in the little Google Home customization, multiple colors and all this stuff. It's a nice looking device. And I'm really curious what the deal with Amazon is for them. I mean, they've got to be licensing the Alexa brains of it. But basically, like, hey, we're going to allow you to undercut the Echo by $50 with our software. I think they must be paying a lot to Amazon in order to justify that.
Well, yeah, Amazon's kind of opened up their Alexa. What we're starting to see now is that Alexa is being built into a lot of things, this included. Right. They do have a more expensive version of this. They have a $180 version of this, a Harden Kardon model. I always have a hard time saying that for some reason. Yep. I get the letters confused. Anyways, improved bass response, improved fidelity. So meant to be more like a fully fledged, nice sounding speaker set up with it. 8 mics, which is one more than the Echo. Up to we got one more in there.
This one goes to 11, guys.
Yes, exactly. You got 7 mics, we got 8. Apparently, supposedly up to 16 feet of reach, which you want out of these home appliances. I mean, overall, we're going to see more and more of these. We're going to talk about one at the very end of today's show. We saved the best for last. This is a category that Amazon came out of nowhere with a couple of years ago. It seemed ridiculous. The ad was ridiculous, yet it's really captured a lot of people's imagination. And now the category is starting to be taken more seriously by a lot of different companies.
Yeah, I feel like the Echo was a bit of a slow burn when it first came out, because it was kind of like you took a while to wrap your head around it. And as early adopters took the risk And then it kind of spread. And I think Google Home just kind of helped to bolster that, as well as the Echo on Tap, the little hockey puck version of Echo, because that's super affordable. And sometimes all people need, they don't need the big fancy speaker. They just want that little one. I think a year and a half ago, we wouldn't have predicted the explosion with home assistant devices. Totally. But now it's one of the most exciting spaces in tech right now. So it's neat to see another entry into it. Although I still ally with Google Home. I still think that gives me the software, the Google Assistant, gives me an edge over the Alexa platform, but I know Echo users are loyal. So,
Echo users are loyal, and there's a lot of support around Echo Alexa's skills. There's a lot of, in fact, there are more and more announcements coming out of CES about like smart appliances, you know, adding skills to. I mean, Echo's just been around for a couple of years now, and with the kind of the skills ecosystem, that means that it's been around longest. It's kind of proven itself more than the other platforms, and so all these companies that want to expand the capabilities of their smart devices are kind of working in that direction seemingly first because it's been established as long. So Echo users end up benefiting pretty early on from a lot of things at one time.
Yep.
Amazon teamed up with is it Seiki, Westinghouse, and Element Electronics to launch a slew of lower cost Fire TV powered 4K TVs. All TVs, they're actually not launching them. They announced them, but they haven't launched them yet. All TVs ranging from 43 to 65 inches will offer 3 gigs of RAM, 16 gigs of internal storage, and a remote control with a microphone. That'll allow you to interact with none other than Amazon's Alexa assistant, because that's part of the Fire ecosystem. No price or availability is listed at the moment, but Amazon does say to expect more details later this year. But Fire TV going from like set-top box to being integrated into these lower-cost TVs, I have to imagine, you know, Amazon being Amazon, they are so close to sales data on all this stuff. That gives them a real advantage in coming into a market like this and knowing what is the price point, the price category that we need to target in TVs to get our technology in there so that they sell like these other TVs do through Amazon.
And then what it's also going to do is it's going to fuel their own show development, because they're going to have a ton of data of what people are watching. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing that Fire TV is reporting back to the Amazon mothership and saying what people are watching, how long they're watching it, how long they're watching their shows, how long they're watching other shows. And, you know, the Amazon Prime Video offering is great, except that they built this walled garden around it for you to access it. You can only access it on Amazon devices, whether you have a Fire Stick or, you know, the other different kind of, you know, devices that have it integrated. And I know a lot of people are like, yeah, I want to watch Mozart in the Jungle. I don't know how to get it. And if Amazon is going to partner with these companies, release well-priced TVs, and then, you know, start really just putting it on the forefront of the living room, you could see a lot more people watching that content.
Yeah. Amazon's video offerings have been kind of a challenge to find.
It's frustrating.
They've improved it over time, but it's just not nearly as ubiquitous or seemingly ubiquitous as something like Netflix is, where that's everywhere. You expect that's to be everywhere.
Exactly. We talked about where when you see a TV device get announced and it doesn't have Netflix, you're like, whoa, what's up? How come it doesn't have Netflix?
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, people with Apple TVs or Chromecasts or anything like that haven't been able to access this Amazon stuff. But now if they buy a new TV and it's Amazon Fire stuff is already driving it, and that stuff is one remote button away, then a lot more people will watch it. And then you can also watch your Netflix and your other stuff that you're watching with those devices.
Yep. Yeah. Amazon doesn't have a button on this next thing that we're going to talk about here. Dish Network.
I noticed.
Launched the Air TV Player. It's an Ultra HD 4K capable set-top box running Android TV. Pretty nice. It integrates Netflix and Sling TV along with over-the-air capabilities when coupled with an OTA antenna. So basically what this does, this allows for Dish to include local networks with its Sling TV service without the need for retransmission deals. So it all kind of works seamlessly together, which is a really nice way to kind of get around that. The Air TV Player with OTA Air TV adapter runs $129.99. And then there's a streaming-only version if you don't need that OTA antenna capability for $99.99.
I guess say aside from it looking like a Fisher Price my streaming TV,
kind of has that look.
That box and that remote control looked just a little like, hey, look, it's TV. But really curious about, well, there's a Netflix button and a Google button, which is interesting.
Yeah, for Google Play.
Yep, exactly. But this is really smart on their part. I mean, the Sling offering is already pretty cool. I played with it when it first came out. I discontinued it just because I didn't want to pay another monthly subscription fee, but I recommend it to a lot of people. And as somebody who doesn't have cable, doesn't want cable, has relied on my over-the-air antenna, this is something I would consider because now I can watch the Oscars and watch Netflix without having to, you know, change the input or jigger what I'm doing or, you know, kind of play with my setup. It's all in one spot. This is a nice device. I want to see people play with it hands-on to see really if the, you know, Android TV we already know is completely underutilized. So it's nice to see that being used. So this one I would like to play with if I can get my hands on one.
Yeah, for sure. If you are a Sling TV user, you get $50 credit when you buy one of these. Ooh. So when you think about it that way, I mean, that ends up knocking the price down even further for money that you're probably already going to spend on a Sling TV subscription anyways. Dish also happened to announce, this is like the Alexa-themed top block, an Alexa skill for controlling its Hopper DVR with the Amazon Echo. So, hey, if you've got an Echo, you've got a bunch of new things coming at you. Hopefully you have
pretty
the
cool
other side of that technology to actually make it useful. So coming up, more news from the Consumer Electronics Show because there was a bunch. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They're the sponsor of this episode. And if you've ever gone through the process of applying for a mortgage, I mean, you've done the hard work of finding the house of your dreams. Then you have to go through this whole application process, which, as necessary as it is, can be kind of challenging. You have to pull this information from all over the place. Hopefully you have access to it. And it's just kind of a drag to have to do that. Well, when it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone that you can trust, who has your best interest in mind, and who can kind of help hold your hand and make it easier for you. With Rocket Mortgage, you'll get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. You don't waste time searching through stacks of old paperwork. With Rocket Mortgage, you can securely store your financial information to get a mortgage approval in minutes. You can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you get the mortgage solution that's right for you, for your unique financial situation. Whether you're looking to buy a home or even refinance your existing mortgage, you can lift the burden of getting a home loan by using Rocket Mortgage. They're just going to make the whole process much easier for you. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. So 2016 showed us how insecure the Internet of Things is right now in a few different ways. The security company Norton, we've all heard of Norton, has a home security device to protect IoT devices in the home and the Wi-Fi networks that they run on. Norton Core is, I think you would agree, a unique-looking geodesic dome-shaped router, because they're all getting really creative with these things now and how they look. That's meant to be out in the open. It's meant to be part of like a focal point of the room. Has a multitude of access control features for guests, family, by device. That includes prioritization settings. But it also does, and this is kind of key to keeping you secure, it does deep packet inspection for the data that passes through it, for malware, viruses, and other baddies, giving the core the power to quarantine an infected device kind of in real time without you having to like run this software on your computer. I think that's the way to go, man. I mean, I almost feel like, you know, to a certain degree, and mind you, I've been on a Mac, so maybe I fall in this like delusional world where I don't have to run antivirus or whatever, but I haven't run this stuff in years. And the part of the reason I don't want to is because I always feel like my experience in the past was that it slowed things down. Maybe it wasn't entirely effective. It broke other things. Just the experience wasn't that great. If this is happening in the router and it's automatically updated, as they say it's going to be updated over time automatically for you, you don't have to think about it. This seems like a really great approach.
Well, yeah, and I think this is a direct response to just the changing way we're using network devices, in that it used to be your computer was plugged into your router or your modem, and then that's what you had to scan on your computer. But now with phones and tablets and game platforms and all these other how many devices we have going through our router, it makes sense to have the protection to build the wall before it leaves your house at the faucet where the data is coming in.
Yeah.
I just think it's fascinating because I if you had gone to me a couple of years ago and say, hey, in 2017, a big trend is going to be routers, I would not have believed. I thought we had solved it. I thought it was over. You know, like routers, they do the job. You know, like it's like a refrigerator or a microwave. You know, it just does what it does. But seeing so many new routers come out with so many different things, and especially like you mentioned at the top, where it's like, you know, it used to be these routers were things you hid in the closet, and now they want them to be on tables and like objects of art and like, you know, with really nice industrial design. I think it's really interesting, and it's nice to see Norton kind of stepping up and building something that can protect all your devices in the home at one point of entry or exit from your connection.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the design aspect of these things is, it's easy to overlook that and to think like, oh, well, that's just stupid. Why would anyone really care? You know, I have this for a purpose, to drive, you know, Wi-Fi through my house. Why do I care what it looks like? But it actually makes a lot of sense. If you make it look halfway decent, not like a big, ugly, clunky piece of technology, people are less likely to hide it in a closet and do these things that actually obstruct it from working the way that it should. You put it behind things, hide it behind things, that actually lowers your ability to kind of stream at higher speeds or, you know, better reliability, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, it really seems like, I agree, a couple of years ago, I probably never would have expected that 2017 would be about routers and everything. Yeah. But in hindsight, what I've realized, and especially since getting the Google Home, is that there was actually a lot of improvement to be made in our house in particular. You know, having our one single router in the living room, like I now notice with Google Home just how much more evenly distributed everything is, and kind of seamless and high speed upstairs as well as downstairs. Like all these headaches that I had before that I just lived with because that's what routers do, you don't have to anymore. And they've kind of lowered the kind of complexity for how these systems work. You know, this included, it's all driven inside, you know, your software suite so that you can understand what devices are connecting, what devices should not be connecting, you know, how many IoT devices you have in your house that are passing through it. All of those are kind of protected by the security features of this. And that's, I think that's a really great approach.
I do think it's interesting that this geodesic dome looks to be the size of a head, which is, it's much bigger than I thought it would be. So, and it's funny because going to the design thing, like the reason why those routers end up in the closets or, you know, tucked away is because of wives and girlfriends and husbands and significant others and who are design focused, who are like, I don't want that thing out here. You know, now that's something that's kind of cool looking. I mean, you know, the Google Home has found a place in this beautiful apartment where my girlfriend is very specific about what gets put out, because it can fit in, because it's well designed. And hey, you know, you make me a device that looks like the Epcot ball and I'm more inclined to buy it. So
yes, why go to Epcot when you can bring Epcot to you?
And protect your devices at the same time. There you go.
It's the best case scenario of combining two things you always wanted in one. Hopping on the in-home Wi-Fi mesh network train is Linksys, who unveiled the VLOP or VLOP. I'm not really quite sure. It's a tri-band system that that has a speed speed drop-offs that are noted in two-band systems. They say like Google Wi-Fi, which Google Wi-Fi is a two-band system. I don't really notice the speed drop-offs, but I guess I haven't really, you know, gone the super techie route on analyzing how it's working. Anyways, Linksys says the VLOP can achieve the best Wi-Fi speeds around. Of course they do. At around $499, you better believe it should live up to that promise, because that's pretty darn expensive. So you can see the three here. When I first saw it, immediately I was reminded of like old like 90s multimedia speakers on your desktop. Not the most impressive design in the world. I could see where why they might have thought they might be kind of following the trend of it just blends in with things, but it doesn't.
Yeah, Linksys needs to, I think, invest in the industrial design department a little more. Yeah. I mean, they're on the right, but like when you compare this to the Google Wi-Fi, you know, solution with those little hockey pucks, those white hockey pucks, I would go with the Google Wi-Fi over this. It definitely looks like 90 speakers. It definitely like.
Well, and they're, you know, they're super tall actually. So I mean, the idea of blending these things in, and by the way, you don't have just one of them, you have three of them, so you've got to find spaces for them throughout your home. So that's going to be kind of a challenge. They're big towers, but it's integrated with Alexa. Funny, isn't that crazy? Everything is integrated with Alexa now, or integrates with Alexa, rather. Pre-order today, stores January 15th. They do sell them in less than three packs. The three pack is $499, two pack $349, and a single is $199. So I don't know. Maybe they're really great. Maybe that three band versus two band is a big difference. They say that's part of the reason why this is much larger than solutions like the Google Home.
I can't believe we're talking about routers. I just cannot believe
it's exciting
it.
Stuff.
I mean,
man.
I'm glad that there's progress and innovation, but I'm shocked.
So. It's a trend. It's hot. Yeah. CES wouldn't be complete without at least a small sampling of robots. Today I have one of those robots for you. Mayfield Robotics showed off its Kuri robot, which is designed to be informational and helpful, and they say a delight to be around thanks to its audible chirps and beeps. So it doesn't have like a voice necessarily that it talks to you. It's more done with beeps and bleeps and that sort of stuff. It has a 1080p camera on the front that can be used as a security measure in your home, so like it can keep track of your home while you're gone. 4-microphone array that allows inhabitants, aka human beings, to talk to it and ask questions like, yes, of course, the example they always give is what's the weather, which made me go, wait a minute, I thought it couldn't speak, but I guess it can give you the answer to that. I hope I'm not deciphering that from bleeps and boops. And then when not directly interacted with, it can wander the halls like Kane from Kung Fu, playing music, reading audiobooks to you, turning off the lights when you forget to switch them off. Let's just hope you don't trip over it. What do you think?
I like that they point out that it's delightful to be around, because when I'm shopping for my home robot, I'm going to make a decision over which one's delightful and not delightful to be around. This looks a little like this is we're one step closer to Rosie from the Jetsons.
Yep.
This, I think.
I think that's it right there. But really, when you think about what it does, it's little, if not anything, more than what a Google Home or an Amazon Echo is. It's just that it has wheels and it goes from room to room.
It's as if they pasted a Google Home or an Echo to a Roomba.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
And gave it a couple of eyeballs that blink. And it's horrifying.
In some ways, it kind of looks like a Google Home with a bowling ball on top.
Well, it's funny because I'm in a one-bedroom New York City apartment, and I know I'd be tripping over this thing left and right.
I know, right?
I can't imagine you, Jason, with a multi-story home.
Well, right? What are you going to do? Those wheels are like this small. That thing's not going anywhere except, you know, and our main floor is actually two levels because there's one part of our house that's like a step up. So, wow, it would be limited to our kitchen and our living room.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to give Mayfield Robotics a tip. Write the check to Disney, license R2-D2's likeness. Make this into an R2-D2 bot, and you will sell millions.
That's a no-brainer. Or Wall-E. You know, yeah. You could really go either direction.
Is Wall-E really in the zeitgeist as much as R2 these days? I think R2 might be the better bet. Wall-E was like 10 years ago now, man. It was still great, though, but...
Was Wall-E 10 years? Yeah, it probably was, actually. I think you were right. When was it?
It's like 8.
2008. Nine years ago. Not to be exact, but there you go. Coming up, news outside of the Consumer Electronics Show is, like I said earlier, a little bit light. We found a few things worth discussing, though, so we'll talk about that. But first, let's take a minute to thank Epson, the sponsor of this episode. Epson's revolutionary cartridge-free EcoTank line of printers for home and office introduce a new age in printing. The EcoTank ET4550 wireless all-in-one printer does not use ink cartridges. Instead, it features an amazing, innovative, refillable ink tank, earning it the title of CES 2016 Innovation Awards honoree. No more out-of-ink frustration. It includes up to 2 full years of ink, equal to 11,000 black pages or 8,500 color pages. You can save up to 80% on ink with low-cost replacement bottles. You just fill them up when they're empty, and you keep that bag stored away, and then when you need to, you just fill it up again. It's awesome. It's powered by precision core printing technology. It has auto two-sided printing and a 30-page auto document feeder. Also, easy wireless printing from tablets and smartphones. My experience with other printers is that is never easy. Here it is, and that's awesome. All EcoTank printers deliver an unbeatable combination of convenience and value. With Epson's EcoTank line of printers, you're going to have the freedom to print without running out of ink. The Epson EcoTank system was named the 2016 Small Biz Windows Printer of the Year. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank today to transform the way your home, office, or workgroup prints. For the best combination of ease and value, turn to the Epson EcoTank printers. That's Epson epsonlabs.com/ecotank. And we thank Epson for their support. So a few other news items that we were able to kick up here. First, every year, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg challenges himself with something new. Last year's challenge, of course, was to build a home AI system. We talked all about that. I think it was called Jarvis. He spent a year learning Mandarin, running 365 miles in a single year, just to name a few. This year, Zuckerberg's challenge to himself is elevated in light of kind of recent events. Somewhat like a politician, Mark plans to visit all 50 states throughout the course of the year to talk with people about how they live their lives and how those lives have been affected by technology. He says that in many ways, technology has connected people, but also made lives more challenging. And he hopes to help find solutions, figure out ways to kind of solve some of these divisions between these two things. I mean, I have to imagine, you know, part of this is kind of driven by a lot of the news that happened, you know, around kind of and kind of the ongoing fake news thing that people kind of attributed at least partially to Facebook throughout the last half of the year, maybe even earlier than that. What do you think about this? Do you think this is a good goal for Zuckerberg? It definitely feels political to me.
Yeah, it definitely feels political. I mean, good for him that he can afford to do this. That's cool.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
I think that it's interesting. You know, the fact that Facebook has connected so many people, and yet people who I talk to feel more and more isolated, is a big issue. And if he is concerning himself with that, then and he feels the need to walk the earth like Kane from Kung Fu, there's your second Kane reference, to get perspective of the people who are using his company's products, then I can't harm him for that. I'm curious to see what shape that's going to take, if he's going to hold town hall sessions or there's going to be some sort of want to talk to Mark sign up here, or if he's just going to walk up to people on the street and be like, hey, what phone are you using? I don't know how he's going to, you know, structure this, but you know, good for him. Good luck spending all that money.
He says that we're kind of at a crossroads of the value that technology affords, kind of where it's gotten to so rapidly, and the cost of disruption to lives and to jobs. We're actually going to talk about one of those in the next story. I mean, the reality is Facebook is so big, its influence, its power is so far reaching, that it's hard to, for so long, technology companies have just kind of had the idea of, look, it's cool because it's technology. See this cool thing we're doing? Isn't it fun? Isn't it neat? Blah, blah, blah. And now it seems like we're kind of, there's a turning point happening here where, and hopefully those that are kind of running these companies are, and it seems like Zuckerberg is, are realizing the impact that some of these decisions make, especially when you get into 1.5 billions of users of your product. It's no longer here's a really cool thing we can do. Isn't it neat that we could attach your location to this, blah, blah, blah. And it becomes something greater, like the impact, the kind of influence over how people think and how people live their lives and whether they feel isolated or not and the impact that has on their lives. All these things are driven by a lot of these decisions that may have seemed pretty light initially, and maybe that's what this is part of.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that notion of spending so much time talking about how cool is this stuff that we can build always makes me think of Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park, who says, right, you spent all this energy figuring out how, you didn't stop to ask if you should.
Right.
You know, and I think that's some of the lessons that we're going to be looking into as, you know, we go further into the 21st century is the right way to apply this technology.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely related. AI, we talk about this all the time. Replacing jobs is what we've been hearing over and over. Well, today we have a real world example of this. Fukoku Mutual Life Insurance, it's a Japanese company, is about to put IBM's Watson Explorer to work as an insurance claim worker, replacing 34 human employees in the process. The move, they say, is expected to increase productivity by 30%. I found this interesting just because there's like actual numbers associated with it, so you can kind of get a sense of some things instead of just being this esoteric thing that we talk about. Increase productivity by 30%, they say. They have to spend an initial $1.7 million to install the system and then $128,000 for maintenance. But the company expects savings of around $1.1 million per year. That means that it's going to get a return on their investment in less than 2 years. So basically, they put the cash up out front, in front. they survive for 2 years, and then at that point, it's just all, you know, like they're just making money off the fact that they made this transition. And this is just kind of a real world example of how a job can be broken down into like these easily replicable steps by a machine and replaced entirely. And it's kind of a small example, right? Like it's a 34 human employees, but you can imagine this scaling outwards and what the impact that would be.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a continuation of the changes to the manufacturing line in automotive plants in the 80s,
yeah,
where you took the guys off the line and replaced them with those robot arms that attach transmissions, but now they're filing insurance claims.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this is the future. The future is artificial intelligence.
Yep. And finally, according to a new report by TrendForce, mobile payments are about to encounter significant growth in 2017. $585 billion was spent using mobile payment services last year. So this would be expecting a jump of somewhere around 25% this year in a single year. The report highlights that Apple Pay and Samsung Pay hold the advantage, Android Pay falling behind the marketing muscle of the other two solutions. I don't know if I've seen a whole lot of marketing around Samsung Pay, but the fact that it works everywhere, yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I find the marketing muscle line to be a bit dubious because I don't really see, other than just, you know, stickers for Apple Pay or Samsung Pay or whatever. I mean, I think there's a last mile problem for all these mobile payment solutions, period. But I don't see a ton of marketing being thrown by any of the companies.
Yeah, and I wonder I mean, wearables aren't really a big deal much anymore, but you know, I'm sure there's at least a little bit of an advantage that Apple Pay has because of kind of the seamless pay with the wearable if you happen to have one versus pulling your phone out. Like, I don't know. I just don't use it. And I've tried and tried and tried to get myself into the habit of using these mobile payments, but ultimately, overall, they just seem more complicated to me than the way I'm used to paying. Maybe that's just curmudgeon me. What about you? I know you were pretty hot on Google Wallet before it was.
Yeah, and then I stopped. Then I stopped using it. I don't know. I just. I mean, especially with the chip cards, that's become the fastest and easy. Just slide the card in and it works.
Yeah.
I should revisit it. I haven't been using Apple Pay. I'm Apple Pay. I've been using Android Pay as much as I used to for no other reason. I should see what takes it here in New York and see what adventures I can have. Maybe I'll do that as a little assignment for January.
Yeah, I mean, assignments, and that's fine. But yeah. if the fact is that anyone has to like convince themselves to use it, if it's going to make your life easier, that should be the reason to use it. Oh, well, I use it because why wouldn't I? It makes my life easier. And I don't necessarily feel like it does that. So I think a lot of people just don't use it.
Yeah, it's got to be frictionless. It's got to minimize. If it can make me get out of Duane Reade faster than taking my wallet out and giving them my card, then that's the value.
Is your Google Home okay right now? It looks like it's flashing at me.
Oh, I think that's the refresh rate of the LED lights on my Christmas tree. Let me turn the Christmas tree off and I'll see if that helps.
I thought your Google Home was like sending us a message or something. Like your timer's going off.
Please let me free.
It's not, I don't think it's distracting. I think it's neat. TNT's fan of the day is Zachary Sims on Twitter, who said this is how he watches TNT at the office while uploading a course online. I'm very curious to know what the course is. But there you go. Many ways to watch TNT. If you're uploading a course, shouldn't you be doing I guess you're at the end of the course if you're uploading it. So you've done your hard work, and while you upload, you reward yourself with Tech News Today. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. You can post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT. And we're going to find it. I told you earlier we were going to save the best for last in this whole Alexa kind of thread that's followed through the entire show. This is kind of related. Can it read a book to your kid? We're going to answer that question. But first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. Tracker, of course, helps prevent you or at least kind of mitigate your losing of things. I'm pretty bad at losing things personally, so I need all the help that I can get. We're all actually probably pretty used to losing our possessions. Newsweek reports the average American wastes 55 minutes a day looking for things they own but cannot find. And Tracker is going to help make losing things a thing of the past. And I'll tell you how to get one for free. The Tracker Bravo locates misplaced keys, wallets, luggage, instruments, bicycles, electronic devices, even pets in seconds. The coin-sized device is constructed with anodized aluminum for the thinnest, most durable tracking. You can attach it to pretty much anything. It has a key loop as well as adhesive for sticking it to the things that you own. Tracker is enabled by Bluetooth LE, so the battery lasts up to 1 full year. You can add a laser engraved message if you want to customize the Tracker Bravo. Things like return information or pet information. So when you put it on a pet's collar, they know the name and the phone number to return the pet to. And you can now personalize your tracker with a custom printed image. You can pretty much put anything you want on there and customize it top to bottom. Pair your tracker with the iOS or Android device that you already own, and you'll find its precise location with a tap of a button. Your phone can track up to 10 devices at one time, and you can customize two-way separation alerts so you're notified before you leave your item behind. If you lose your phone, you just press the button on the tracker and your phone will ring even if it's on silent. With over 3.5 million devices shipped, Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world, so your lost item shows up on a map, even if it happens to be miles away. And if you lose your item, the Tracker app records its last known location on a map so that when another Tracker user comes within 100-foot range of your item, you will receive a GPS update of where your item is located so you can go get it. Go to thetracker.com right now and never lose your possessions again. Plus, just for our audience, if you enter promo code TNT, you'll get a free Tracker Bravo with your order. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT to get your free Tracker Bravo today. All right, so toy maker Mattel is showing off what it calls the first smart baby monitor called the Aristotle. It has an increasingly standard tall cylindrical shape. Kind of looks a little familiar. They're all having this like same kind of design approach here. Colorful base, of course, that houses the brains and the speakers in there, as well as a separate HD camera that you can use for monitoring your baby, let's say. The monitor collects nap and diaper change information. It can do things when baby wakes up from a nap, like turn on the lights or run white noise, which is basically go back to sleep, kid, or sing a lullaby. It'll read a nighttime story to your kid if you don't want to be doing that, which seriously, you should be doing that anyways. And it also includes games as the child gets older. I don't know how I feel about this. What do you think, Rob?
Well, I mean, I'm surprised this from Mattel. I'm glad to see them kind of expanding in that regard. I do have to question the claim of the first smart baby monitor, because I just did a Google search for smart baby monitor, and I can find at least five companies that will question that claim.
But are they smart?
Well, yeah, exactly. But you know, and the thing is, there's been baby tech for several years now. I know there was a smart mat for changing baby, like it weighed your baby when you put it down when you changed the diaper, and like did all this sort of sensor stuff. Mm-hmm. I know WeThings there's a lot of camera stuff out there. It's neat to see Mattel combining into like the Amazon Echo, Google Home model of the cylinder that sits in the room, and you can, I mean, it's using Bing for search and queries, which is cool, right? Like, I don't know. I'm not surprised. I'm more surprised it's from Mattel than anything, that other than the fact that it exists. I expect somebody to make this, but Mattel, I didn't expect that.
Well, that's just proof that everybody feels like they need to get into this category right now.
Yeah.
I couldn't, like, everything I read mentioned Alexa, but I think just in a this is very similar to Alexa sort of way, not that it's actually running or integrated with Amazon Alexa. So I wonder, I mean, you know, companies like Amazon, Google, they've poured so much money and R&D and all this sort of stuff into the development of their AI that runs these things. So I wonder if Mattel, little scrappy upstart, you know, toy company Mattel, walks into the room and says, hey, we've got one of those too. How useful it is in the grand scheme of things comparatively, it's probably more like a toy than it is.
But that said, I mean, Google Home and Amazon Echo is great, but it's not designed for the user experience of a baby.
That's true.
Right? I mean, like the baby user experience is a lot different, you know? And so, and it, what's interesting about this device is that not only is there stuff to monitor the baby for on the parent side, which most smart baby tech is, you know, it's monitoring for parents to see how the baby's doing. This actually is for interacting with the child, which is, I don't think anybody is doing. So that's really interesting. I think that's, you know, by, you know, Lord knows my friends who have kids, and I know Jason, you can attest this, when that baby starts crying at 4 a.m, you know, and if this thing can start playing white noise and put the baby back to sleep and you get a couple more hours of sleep, that's probably a good thing, right?
Yeah. Yes. On one hand, but. Yes. On one hand, when it's 4 a.m. and your baby wakes up and all you want more than anything is sleep, there might be that kind of, you know, the thought that using technology to do this in an automatic sort of way might actually help. And great, I can get some sleep. On the other hand, like, I don't know if I'm personally, I don't know if I would be willing to hand over parent control to technology for a baby that young, right? Like there's a connection that happens when you're involved with it. I mean, that's kind of the point of being a parent.
Totally agreed. And I don't think any of these technologies should replace the connection a parent has with a child or a caregiver has with a child. But this can, you know, this can be used to help augment it.
Sure.
And to help, you know, kind of help the, yeah, like don't let this thing read stories to your kids. You read the story to your kid. I agree with you there, you know, but you know, if it allows the kid to, you know, as the kid grows up to ask questions and have somebody answer and play games and things like that, then it's just another device. I don't know. I think it's,
yeah,
I think it's a lot better than, or potentially a lot better than people who just plant their kids in front of the TV or the iPad and let the kids zone out like zombies. So,
yeah. Yeah, I am curious to know what the kind of developmental process would be if a baby began its life experiencing this sort of interaction from, you know, from the point, yes, that it could, it's developing and onward. Rob Fujioka, Mattel's chief product officer, actually said in this, in one of the articles that I read, if we're successful, kids will form some emotional ties to this. Hopefully it will be the right types of emotional ties.
That's a really weird thing to say publicly. That's really weird.
I know. Listen, I read Rob, that. I was like, I don't think you say that out loud if you're the chief product officer. I mean, I think it was meant to address kind of potential concern around like what is the effect on a baby if this is what they're exposed to as an infant. But there's a little bit of uncertainty there. Uncertainty tied to the fact that they actually don't know, because we haven't really done a whole lot of that, I would have to imagine, up to this point.
Oh man, yeah. No, I sometimes I'm excited for the future, chill people of the world, and sometimes I'm horrified. So I don't know.
I completely agree. Equal parts both, as far as I'm concerned. Ron Richards, thanks once again for hopping in the hot seat and being my co-host on today's episode. Really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you for having me. And it's sorry about any Skype issues. The rain and Time Warner is never a good combination, but it's always great to be here. And CES is so exciting. So much great technology. Good stuff.
That's okay, because the audio has been a little out of sync. So it kind of runs with our Walking the Earth Like Kang from Kung Fu theme. It's kind of like an old Kung Fu movie. So it's been great.
Yeah, there you go.
Can people follow all the stuff you're doing?
Yeah, so you can just follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/RonXO, and that's where I post about everything I'm working on. Real quickly, we do All About Android here on Twit every Tuesday. If you like Android stuff, I'm sure, Jason, you mentioned that before. That's the go-to spot. Wow. There's our pretty faces.
I haven't seen that picture yet. That's a really interesting picture.
There you go. That was last time I was in town, it looks like.
Yeah. Am I really angry?
You look really angry. Yeah, I think you're doing – it might have been the let's go into the arena mode, I think.
I think that's exactly what I'm saying right there is let's go into the arena. Flo agrees.
It's an interesting moment, and apparently I'm vamping directly for the camera, which is odd too. Yeah. So, so All About Android, that's always a great time, and I'm sure we're going to talk about the cool CES Android stuff that's related to that for the next couple of weeks. Additionally, over my other podcasts over at ifanboy.com, where we're talking about comic books every week, as well as comic book movies and TV shows and geeky stuff. So definitely head over there and subscribe to that show, as well as Damn Fine Podcast at damnfinepodcast.com, where me and Tom Merritt are revisiting and reanalyzing Twin Peaks from the beginning. New episode comes out tomorrow, so definitely check it out.
Awesome. Always fun, man. I will talk to you in 20 minutes for All About Android.
I'll be here.
Thanks again. Tomorrow marks the triumphant return of Megan Maroney sitting right next to me at this table, and the band will be back together. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. You can find us on Twitter. We're at Tech News Today TV. You can find all the ways to subscribe to the show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. You can find me there. Thanks to our technical director, Kara Cole. Thank you, Kara. Thanks to Burke for helping out in the studio. Thanks to Kevin for editing and hopefully making this look better than we are. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.